Are you folks being nice to yourselves? How are you living? Is the Eightfold Path operating in your life? Or is it just something you hear about and think, oh, how interesting, and keep moving on? How is it with you?
It's harder than it looks.
Is it harder?
Mm.
So you're kind of well drilled in the Eightfold Path? Do you know? You have a sense of what it is beyond just the list? Do you have a sense of how it motivates and affects every waking moment of your life? Is that happening or not?
Maybe the sense it's of sort self-judgment. If I get a lot of the self-judgment, that's when I know I'm coming from.
Do people know their Eightfold Path? Can you recite it in order, backwards and forwards?
Okay,
got
now
the list.
In Pali.
There are people who know it in English and in Pali, and can recite it even like the subtext of what each one means, but I'm not sure if they've gotten to live it yet. Are you getting to live it? If you are, you know, just tell me and we'll move on. I'll tell you a story or something. But if you're not living the Eightfold Path, I want to delve into it a little bit more. Okay, well, I'm going to interpret somber meaning, oh, just get on with it. Tell us about the Eightfold Path. So I'll do that for now. So as I understand the right view, and some of you could correct me, but don't. As I understand right view, there are two basic types. There's the right view that is shared with other religions. Very basic right view. Right view of cause and effect. Right view of karma. What goes up must come down. What goes around comes around. Do you have that saying in Australia? What goes around comes around? Okay. So I'm so glad we have that saying, because that's a very easy way to understand what we're talking about with karma. In the region where I'm from, Christianity is very, very strong. Baptist preachers declare, you reap what you sow. What you plant, you're going to harvest. So you plant apples, you don't harvest oranges. So if you plant one apple seed, how many apple seeds do you get back? Do you get one apple seed back? If the soil is fertile, there's rain, there's sun, you plant one apple seed, how many apple seeds may you get back?
Thousands.
You could end up with a whole apple orchard based on one seed. What about oranges? You're going to get an apple orchard? You could get an orange orchard. When what goes around comes around, it doesn't necessarily come around at the same force that we put it out there. Actually, it could come back with gale force. It could come back a lot more than what we put out there. It's part of the nature of things. So it makes sense to be very careful what we're putting out there. Would you say? Would you agree with that? Now, the other right view is the right view of the Four Noble Truths. And that's at two levels, mundane or supramundane. Supramundane right view is right view held by somebody who has seen path and fruit at any level of enlightenment. So, we have regular, ordinary, all the these various good religions share in right view, that first one, of basic law of karma. You reap what you sow. What goes around comes around. And then there's the right view of the Four Noble Truths. So let's just stick with that first one. That first one is all we really need to get started on a good spiritual path. If we don't have that, it's not easy to get started on a good spiritual path. But if we have at least that, we can get going with it. So we have a sense of a little bit of urgency and a little bit of caution here. What am I planting? So would it make sense to put out into the world cruelty, given that what goes around comes back around in a big way? Humor me here. Thank you. No! Okay. What about hatred? What about grasping? Would it make sense to put out into the world open-hearted letting go?
Definitely.
Would it make sense to put out non-hate or loving-kindness? Yes. And would you want coming back around to you compassion rather than cruelty? Okay. Now let's just do a quick check here. How strong is our compassion? Are we really investing in compassion? When the Buddha described what he meant by the second step of the Eightfold Path, he said, Sama Sankappa, right intention, right thought. And he divided it into three parts. Nekama sankapo, which is letting go, renunciation. Avyabhada sankapo, which is non-hatred. Avihingsa sankapo, the non-harmfulness, non-cruelty. So this is very important, part of our Eightfold Path. Based on the right view of karma, we have the good incentive to live the second step of the right Eightfold Path, of the right right intention. That word right is variously translated as it's samma, as right or harmonious or skillful. I'm told that it's a word from music theory that means in tune. So this is the intention that's in tune. In tune with what? In tune with reality. Not some dogma, not some belief system, just reality. So, intention of the open-hearted letting go. Making peace with the world. Intention of loving kindness. Intention of compassion. I really want to linger on this compassion for a moment. When's the last time you called yourself stupid? When's the last time you scolded yourself in your mind? Let's put it this way. Who has criticized themselves harshly, cruelly, with words like stupid, idiot, dummy, failure, words like that, within the last 5 years? Raise your hand. Who has not? Raise your hand. Aha. Awesome. Yay, Alex. So that was just about everybody. How about the last week? Who has not criticized themselves harshly with those kinds of thoughts, those kinds of words in the mind? Raise your hand. In the last week? Last 24 hours? Okay. It's So a few of you have not been harshly cruel in the mind with yourself in the last 24 hours. It's pretty sobering, isn't it? I want to share with you what I call the four-year-old standard. Imagine you had a tender little four-year-old at your side all the time, and every thought you say is verbalized to this little four-year-old. I'm sorry, every thought in your head is verbalized to this four-year-old. So you think, oh, what an idiot I am. The four-year-old would hear, you idiot, what an idiot you are. Okay? How about if we were to make a conscious effort to have all of our thoughts be suitable for this tender, beloved little four-year-old child? And all of our actions, too, within reason, be suitable for a four-year-old child. For example, what if you were to feed a four-year-old child an entire chocolate cake for dinner? Would that be suitable? I know a guy who was living on pies for a while. I think he was depressed, just eating pie. Would that be a correct way to treat a four-year-old child, or would that be actually neglect?
Of course, it would be not very healthy.
Not healthy. It would be neglect. What if you didn't exercise your child? The four-year-old child. What if you made that child work day and night, not giving her enough rest? Wouldn't that be cruel? If you didn't give that four-year-old child enough rest for suitable for a four-year-old, wouldn't that be pretty cruel? Not exercising, not playtime, not rest. Telling that child how stupid, how foolish, how what a failure, and so on and so on. Would that be a happy, bright-faced, carefree four-year-old child? So I would like to propose that we all take on the four-year-old standard. Within reason. I mean, there could be some adult activities that obviously wouldn't be suitable for a four-year-old. But in terms of our thoughts and our words, how we take care of ourselves, what if we were to try to live up to the four-year-old standard? I think we would come a lot closer to fulfilling avihingsa sankapo, the non-cruelty aspect of right intention, right or right thought, second step of the Eightfold Path. Wouldn't that be very, very supportive to a lifestyle of greater serenity? You think? I had a suspicion that you folks were hard on yourselves. It was true. You are hard on yourselves. I saw how many hands went up and didn't go up. Stop it! Don't do that. Treat yourself like you're precious. How many people in this world do you think you have a reasonable chance to get enlightened?
Oh.
Really?
All of us have a chance.
Now, how many do you have the chance to get enlightened? You individually. Oh. Some of you may be bodhisattvas. I'm not going there. I don't even think that way. How many people think you're going to lead to enlightenment in this life? You've got a really good chance for a certain number. One. There may be others later, but you've got a really good shot at enlightening one person. And who would that be? Oneself. Is that going to happen while being cruel to oneself? Given that what goes around comes around, that what goes up must come down, An image I often like to use is that everything you're doing, you're tossing up over your own head. Am I tossing up flower petals that will come down so beautifully in a way that's very uplifting? Or am I tossing up bricks? Bam! I've demonstrated that bam before, and I've done it too hard. So I'm not going to take the actual bam on the head. Bam. Bricks. Every action. Okay. So given all of this speech, what kind of speech do we want coming back at us? Lying. Is it bricks or flower petals? And a big fat lie, is it a big fat brick? Of course. And what if we just want to convince everyone in the office that when self is right and that other person is wrong and everyone should be on my side and against that one, and besides that one doesn't use deodorant, did you notice? And that one does this and does that. And did you know that they're, you know, stealing copies and da, 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 da. What's that? The divisive speech. Malicious gossip. I'm not saying you never ever should report somebody in the office. I'm just saying there's an energy behind it that's really quite damaging to oneself. It's bricks. And harsh speech. Bricks or petals? Who wants harsh speech coming back at them when they need gentle words? Raise your hand. If you want harsh speech coming at you when you need beautiful, gentle words, please raise your hand. Remember the seed to orchard. The next word. We should be scared. We should be frightened of the next word out of our mouths. I'm not pretending that I'm standing on the mountaintop with all of this well in hand. I want my own speech to be much, much better. I've got a long way to go myself. In part because of that awareness, I know how easy it is to fail on this one. Each word, another brick. Each word, another flower petal. We should be frightened, actually. And the Buddha said that all useless speech is harmful. That one has really caught me in the gut a number of times. You know, particularly after a babbling session of da 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 about the weather and the useless talk. All useless speech is harmful. All useless speech is harmful. Wow. Now, we've got to understand what is useless speech, though. Babbling with your children? That's not useless. Guys? Chit-chatting with the wife? Not useless. They have a much higher need for verbal interaction. Sometimes you just have to smile and pretend to hear it all. And they're so happy. But I think a lot of us, particularly a lot of us ladies, have a lot of room for improvement in how much we choose to verbalize. That's number three on the Eightfold Path, the right speech. Number four is right action. Bottom line with right action. If you don't want killing to affect you or your family, you don't kill anything. What it is you kill, you know, has some impact. Killing of an insect is simply not the same as the killing of someone's pet, which is not the same as killing of a human being, which is not the same as killing of your parents. They're in a whole special category. If we don't want theft to affect us or our loved ones, goes around, comes around in a big way. If we don't want adultery to destroy our family, our loved ones' families, we would be very, very cautious. Adultery is so tricky because it starts out so innocently, in quotes. Not really innocently, but subtly. It starts so subtly. I think for a man or a woman to be really true to their obligations in their relationships, they actually have to live with the kind of caution of a Buddhist monk or nun. Really. Celibate to the world except for their loved one. So if you're doing anything that wouldn't be quite right for a monk or nun, someone other than your beloved, with whom you have, you know, an understanding, then you might really want to take a look at it. At work, are you lingering too long over the coffee machine with someone? How would that look if a monk were doing that action? Really look hard at our actions. Exchanging phone numbers with someone who would be completely unsuitable to be having private conversations with. Texting. Lots of private text. Any private texting. If you're texting somebody, are you CCing his or her spouse? What's up with that if you're not? Or your own spouse? Why not? The current media gives a lot of privacy, a lot of opportunities for emotional romance. You might say, oh, it doesn't matter, it doesn't mean anything, you know, it's not physical. Well, what goes around comes around in a big way. Where are you going? And adultery doesn't start with, usually, with an ordinary person. With a depraved person, or adultery just goes, hello, hello, let's do it. Okay, that's a depraved person. With ordinary people, that's not where how adultery starts. Adultery starts with a glance. Adultery starts with checking out a physique. Adultery starts with looking at whether he's got a ring on or not. Adultery, you're not available. Adultery starts with, what's her name over there? Adultery starts very, very small. So do avalanches. There comes a point when you can't stop an avalanche. You have to be very, very cautious if you want to avoid a very large brick. I have counseled people who have committed adultery, and the adulterer is absolutely devastated. How much more so those who are affected? A friend of mine was working in an elementary school, and she told me about there was this situation of there were two different families bringing their kids to the school, and the husband of one family and the wife of the other family got together. And then the spouses, the whole thing blew up. And the wives came across each other in the parking lot and started screaming at each other while the children ran to the windows watching. Elementary school. It can get that ugly. And what did it start with? A little gift, a little glance. Carpooling together. Lingering over the copy machine. A little innocent text. Opportunity to just have a couple of drinks after work. Really, it's one to be very, very careful. An avalanche starts with a little tiny snowball that gets tossed. Tiny one. And it's so disastrous. Covered right action? Yes. That was number 4 in the Eightfold Path. Number 5. Who can tell me number 5 other than Alex?
Right livelihood.
Yes, right livelihood. It doesn't have to be the ultimate spiritual livelihood, just one that's not obstructive. There are not many professions that are in themselves obstructive. A lot of times it's the job site, particular situation, the way the job is done. Or for example, if one is having to lie about billing and so forth, that could make an otherwise good job not a good job. Or even being in the military, it could be a good job if all you're doing is lovingly feeding people. So you have to look at each situation. But there are some jobs that are inherently no good, like trafficking in human beings, trafficking in animals, trafficking in poison. Those are inherently harmful, too harmful to get past that. But those that are not inherently harmful, you've got to look at your own individual job situation and say, is this non-obstructive? Is this allowing me to be in a wholesome mental state? And if so, good, go with it. And it can change. We have to keep asking. A different boss, a different job assignment, it could change. Livelihood also includes little things on the side, like if you're selling a car and you cover up the knock with some little fluid or something and you deceived somebody and you got some of your livelihood off of that. That's wrong livelihood too. Selling your house, covering up the flaws, it's not nice. What goes around coming back around in a big way, you don't want that. Right, livelihood, okay. Now, those ones on speech, action, livelihood, that's really dealing with these, you know, these external conditions of our lives. 6, 7, and 8 are about training the mind. Right effort, right mindfulness, and right
concentration.
I've recently heard concentration redefined as right stillness, and I really appreciate that, because concentration sounds like something different, but stillness, I think, really gets the feeling of it more. So, right effort. I'm going to pass on that one for a moment because it's so important. I want to go on to the other two and get back to it. Right mindfulness, people write entire books about it. I think you've probably studied it a lot. Be here now, 4 foundations of mindfulness. Know what your body and mind are doing. Be in your body. Have you ever seen somebody walking down the street who didn't seem to even be connected to their body? It's like this face walking down the street dragging a body behind it. Have you ever kind of seen that? Some people are just not in their bodies at all. No bodily awareness. And then think of the contrast of that with, say, a ballet dancer. Alive in every little cell of their body. You can just see they're really present. Have you noticed that? Do people watching sometime and see. Some people are walking, they look like you can imagine a donkey with a carrot hanging right in front of its face and it's just going like this. It seems like all of their awareness is right here as they're walking, and there's just no awareness there. It's good to have awareness of the body. Don't abandon it. I'd be with the whole body. Many years ago, I worked as a caregiver for a lady who was quadriplegic. She had no feeling from the neck down, from the shoulders down, because of a broken neck. No sentience, no consciousness could arise in the rest of her body. And I got kind of sensitive to the difference of touching here, where there was kind of a response in the body. There was a meeting of consciousness with the hand, and here, where it was just cold and lifeless. Not cold, but cool and lifeless. There was not that responsiveness. And around that time, I had a friend who was doing some kind of marathon. We were talking about his shoes, and I playfully did something with his shoe, and I inadvertently touched his ankle, and I was a laywoman then. I yanked my hand back, absolutely appalled, because he was a guy who did a lot of intellectual work, and he didn't have much awareness of body. And when I touched there, it felt dead, like that same feeling of my friend who had no consciousness in that part of her body. There was no responsiveness there, of consciousness there. It kind of gave me goosebumps. It was kind of awful to realize. I said, oh, that's how it is. A lot of times people have so much of their attention on their thoughts or on what's ahead of them. There's no attention here in the body. So sometimes when people have come to me for teachings, I advise them things like, try to be aware of the back of your heel when you're walking. Try to be aware of the back of your knees. This one guy was a computer programmer who was coming for teachings. And there was something about him, it's just like his whole awareness was hanging out in front of his face. And so I went behind him and I almost touched his back. And I said, can you feel this? And it kind of gave him goosebumps all over his back. You know, you ever have somebody do that? Have someone do that to you sometime where they're almost touching your back. You kind of wiggle a little bit and feel that finger almost touching your back. I said to periodically become aware of his, told him to become aware of his back like that. Instead of the computer screen, you just stop and become aware of his back as though someone were almost touching it. I didn't touch him. I just went behind him, almost touched. And he started doing that. And over the next several months, he changed. It looked like he gained about 20 pounds. He didn't gain any weight at all, but he became more physically solid. It's the most amazing thing to watch. He was very thin. He needed that look. And he got more grounded. He just looked like a whole different person and over the next several months, just putting his mind into his body by becoming more aware of his back. And I'd also told him, he was one of those I told to pay attention to the back of his heel and the back of his knee. He got in his body. It's the most wonderful thing to witness. So anyway, people write whole books on right mindfulness, and you probably know quite a lot about it from previous teachings. So, right stillness. Are we taking time apart? The Buddha, and inevitably throughout the scriptures, he described the right stillness as the jhanas. We can still get benefit from being quiet, even just a little bit. Even just getting quiet for a minute, an hour, every day, makes a big difference in people's lives. So to the extent we give ourselves time for stillness, to that extent we benefit. And it's a wonderful thing. Can you imagine if someone told you, I've got these stocks you could buy, and there's 100% return on this? Like, wow, wouldn't you invest? And then you'd see it's true. You know, you put in a dollar, you got a whole another dollar back in this short period of time. Obviously, I don't know stocks. But anyway, you get my point. You would invest more and more. The more we put into stillness, the more we get right back. It's a wonderful thing. Highly recommended by the Buddha. Even just a little bit of it. The jhanas, I'm told, they're absolutely transformative. But even just little bits of stillness, even that is transformative. Number 6 on the Eightfold Path, that right effort. Do you know, other than Alex, Do you know what that right effort really means? Do you know how the Buddha divided it up, how he sorted it out, this right effort? But then everyone speak at once.
The effort to maintain, the effort to avoid, and the effort to cultivate.
That was very mysterious sounding, wasn't it? So it's the effort to prevent unarisen, unwholesome, evil states of mind from arising by making effort to drain up energy and exerting mind. Effort to abandon any unwholesome, evil states of mind that arose despite your best efforts by making effort to drain up energy and exerting mind. Effort to develop wholesome mental states that have not yet arisen by making effort to drain up energy and exerting mind. And effort to further develop, to maintain and further develop wholesome mental states you've already got going, not to allow them to disappear, but to bring them to growth, to maturity, to the full fruition of development by making efforts, stirring up energy and exerting mind. This is choosing wholesome mental states over unwholesome mental states every waking moment. This is where the path really just bursts into life. This is where you are transforming every moment. Every moment becomes your road to beauty, your road to serenity, your road to even freedom, enlightenment. When I question children, even very little children, they know intuitively the wholesome versus the unwholesome, the wholesome versus the unwholesome. They know it. Anger, good or bad, they'll say bad. Compassion, good or bad, they'll say good. As long as they know the word, as long as the vocabulary doesn't exceed their knowledge, they know automatically which category to put it in. It's deep in our hearts. We know already. A few things we're a little uncertain of sometimes. People get a little confused around grief. They get a little confused around indifference or detachment. So here's the key. That which is unwholesome is any mental state that rests upon or comes out of greed, hatred, delusion. The wholesome comes out of non-greed, non-hate, clarity. So then you can know. Already it's very clear. Patience will be louder.
Wholesome.
I'm not stopping until you guys like give it to me loud. Every voice. Come on. One, two, three.
Wholesome.
Okay. Cruelty.
Wholesome.
Rage.
Wholesome.
Happiness at others' joy.
Wholesome.
Loving kindness.
Wholesome.
Irritability.
Unwholesome.
Sarcasm.
Unwholesome.
Crankiness.
Unwholesome.
Lying.
Unwholesome.
Honesty.
Unwholesome.
Serenity.
Unwholesome.
Joy.
Unwholesome.
Bliss.
Unwholesome.
Okay. We know where grief belongs in these categories because it's rooted in what? What is grief rooted in?
Clinging.
Yes. It's rooted in greed and aversion and delusion, actually. And when we get a little confused around detachment or indifference, just look at where it's coming out of. If detachment is coming out of wisdom, coming out of non-greed, non-hate, clarity, then it's on the wholesome side. If indifference is coming out of a shut down, aversive quality, it's very unwholesome. So we have to just see what it's coming out of, and then you know which grouping any mental state belongs in. So fueling this path, enlivening this path, turning this path into what we're doing every moment, it's this business of knowing the wholesome from the unwholesome and choosing skillfully. The effect can be radical. Imagine this. Imagine if you were given a choice of two places to stay for a week. The Hilton Hotel in Maui, Hawaii, or dungeon of a prison. It looks like it would be an easy choice, but there are conditions. In the tropical resort Maui Hilton scenario, you have argued with your loved one, you are full of rage, pain, grief, despair, unrequited lust. You are full of vengeance without any break. Your mind is racing. You have no peace. You have no serenity, no joy. You are absolutely miserable with these unwholesome mental states. With the prison scenario, you have a well-trained mind. So the guards are taking your food on the tray and pushing it under the door. No word or a word of discouragement, if anything. And there you sit, all by yourself, with a well-trained mind, radiating powerful loving kindness to the whole prison, to the whole world, if you like. Your heart is full. You need nothing. If anyone were to open the door and look at you, which they're not going to do, but if they were, they would see light around your face. So bright, so beautiful. You could sit there unmoving, immersed in bliss, if you like, or you could go deeper into meditation if that gets tiring. For the whole week. Without changing a detail, which would you choose? Those who would choose the Hilton Hotel in Maui, raise your hand. Those who would choose prison under those circumstances for the week, raise your hand. Those who choose not to vote, raise your hand. All right. Well, those who choose not to vote, I'll let y'all think about that. Wow. There's actually a scenario under which you would choose prison over the Hilton in Maui. And the reason that I came up with this metaphor to explain about mental states to people is because I went to the Hilton in Maui just before the divorce. It was bad. So out of experience, I think prison with a well-developed mind would have been better. Definitely would have been better than my big vacation to Maui just before the divorce. All those years ago. I think it was the Hilton. It could have been the Hyatt. One of those. They put a little dark chocolate on the bed when they make up the bed for you. And there are orchids in the room. It doesn't ease the injured heart with the untrained mind. So what does that mean to your life? What external circumstances do you need to manipulate to make you happy if the well-trained mind is really where happiness comes from? So all the efforts you've ever done to put yourself in a position in which you can be happy were futile if what they actually did were put you in a position where your mind was less calm and pleasant. Not too late. Number 6 of the Eightfold Path is sitting right there for you to practice right this minute and to make a determination you're going to stay with the rest of today, tomorrow, the rest of your life. Why not? We've got that little child your imaginary four-year-old with you to help you with your behavior of body, speech, and mind. And you and your little imaginary child can delight in the most beautiful mental states. What are some beautiful mental states that we might enjoy? Tell me some. Anybody. Give me a beautiful mental state you might enjoy. Anyone?
Loving kindness.
Loving kindness. What's another one? You in the chair here, lady. Yeah.
Joy.
Joy. What's another one?
Peace.
Peace. Can someone keep count for me? Alex, can you count? Would you keep count for me? We got three so far.
Mudita.
Mudita. Joy at what others have. Isn't it a shame we don't have a word for that in English? Two words for envy or jealousy, and not one word for the opposite. Now, what does that say about this culture? Not one word for it. Joy at what others have, altruistic joy, sympathetic joy. Yes, beautiful mental state that we perhaps don't cultivate enough. Thank you. You here on the end.
Gratitude.
That is so important. Thank you. Gratitude. You realize you can get through a lot in this life with a little gratitude. One time I was at the Greyhound bus station, the main bus system in the States. And absolutely miserable standing in a line for a bus I wasn't sure I was even going to get to catch because the line was so long. Feeling a bit sorry for myself. We all were. We're all getting cranky. It was already a late bus and you don't even know if you're going to get to catch it. And then I thought, isn't it a good thing that there aren't any big chemical smells making me unwell right now? Okay, that's good. Isn't it a good thing it's neither too hot nor too cold in here and right in this room right now? Oh yeah, that's a good thing. I'm pretty glad about that. Isn't it a good thing that this bus I intend to take, that the likelihood that somebody would shoot us all in it as we could drive by, like has happened in some places, like, you know, when there was the partition, India, the Muslims and Hindu lands were, you know, when they were partitioning off, and people were shooting into the trains, into the buses as people were going by, massacring, you know, large numbers of people. Not likely in that bus ride. Highly unlikely. Virtually impossible. Isn't that a good thing? Very unlikely that the police would stop the bus and harass any of us or pull, you know, the wrong sort of person off the bus. Very, very unlikely. I'm not saying it'll never happen. My country is getting worse and worse in that kind of way. But at this point, not likely. Wow, I'm very glad about that. Not very likely that an axe murderer would rise up among us and start hacking away. I got so happy standing in that line. I just got joyous thinking of all the horrific things that weren't happening. So I decided that lack of gratitude was actually just a lack of imagination. As long as you can think of things that are really awful, you can become quite grateful. You can become grateful for air, water, warmth, coolness, clothing, food, people not spitting on you. I'm so glad you're not spitting on me right now. That's a wonderful thing. Not one little fleck. Not one little drop of moisture has gone pew, right across the room at me. Isn't that wonderful? No one has made a rude gesture. Or rude noises. Just a little bit of humor, a little bit of imagination, and gratitude is right there. Wonderful, isn't it? What else? How many are we up to? Alex? You said you can count. Oh, six. I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Okay, give me some more.
Acceptance.
Yes. What else?
Generosity.
What else?
Equanimity.
What else? How many is that? What else? How about energetic effort? The Buddha mentioned 37 Bodhipakya Dhamma, 37 factors towards enlightenment, Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Paths, and so forth. If I recall correctly, 9 of them involve energy, energetic effort. That's a big part. Laziness is not part of the Buddha's path. Energy, effort, zeal. Those are 3. 3 more. What are we up to? Huh? Serenity, peace, patience. Any of those fresh? Have we said any of them? Charity? We said compassion already? Compassion?
Forgiveness.
What else?
Insight.
What else?
Rapture.
And one pointedness of mind, that's another one. What else?
Bliss?
Have we said bliss yet? Bliss. Did we say honesty? Yes? I said it earlier, but did we say it in the list? That's another one. Is that all we can come up with? Maybe some more. Think of negative things and go for their opposite.
Loving yourself.
Okay, taking yourself not too seriously. I think that's a big one. This is when I take myself too seriously. That's when I get into trouble. I hear something over here? Helpfulness, respectfulness,
cheerfulness.
Yeah, I just smiled because my father is a very cheerful person. It just brought memories of him. And we can even do the opposites of some negative ones, like non-sarcasm, abstention from sarcasm. Non-harmfulness. Non-irritability. Non-crankiness. What are we up to? Okay, so that's about so that's about 20 wholesome states. You can choose from any one of them. Pick one. Metta is a really extremely powerful one. It's a great entry to any of the others. It's a real easy shift out of any unwholesome state. And you can't get into metta compassion. Sometimes when I am just completely hopeless, no metta, no serenity, I have compassion for myself being in this state. I just say, it's okay. It's okay to be like this. It's okay. And there I'm in a wholesome state. There it is. All right, folks, so that's your Eightfold Path, and it's 9:30. So I propose that we close now, and then those who like to stay on and talk with me more, do so, like any more Q&A, any Q&A or anything like that. Let's just go ahead and close. Venerable, do you end with a blessing or anything?
Aham sama sambuddho bhagava buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivandaṃ bhagavato dhammo dhammaṃ namassahāmi.
Reverence. That's another one. Reverence. Awe. Triple gem bless and protect you. May you receive your highest aspirations in this very life. Sadhu. I'm sorry, excuse me, but would people kindly pay respect to our venerable senior monk?
Oh. Wonderful. I must say I was very delighted with that talk, all except the one bit I was very disappointed with was to learn that sarcasm is unwholesome. Right? A bit of a shock to me. But anyway.
It was a very difficult one for me to give up.
Surely irony is okay. Anyway, we can nuance that one up later on. So thank you very much. I do really appreciate that, and it's been wonderful to have you. Anybody would like to see Aya again, she'll be at Sunday for the next few days.